This podcast was sponsored by Normal. Normal. Sexual pleasure at your fingertips, guaranteed.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
We at Fat and Eyes pay our respects to the traditional custodians of this land we record on today. This land is and always will be Aboriginal land. Hello everyone and welcome to a brand spanking new episode of the Fat and Eyes podcast. I am your host Demi Lynch and we are back again talking about the issues, topics, taboos about being a fat bitch. And today on the show, we have another fellow podcaster. This is Kelly. She is the co-host alongside Alicia of the fabulous podcast that is, there is no filters on this podcast. It is the Two Humorous Nurses podcast. It is insightful. It is interesting. It is, you get all the details that you need about what it's like to be in the medical industry. That is more drama filled than you'd actually think, even more than Grey's Anatomy, from what it seems like. Kelly, how are you, my dear? How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Hello.
Now, you did an episode this week on the podcast, which people right after this, listen to immediately because it will leave you enraged and it will leave you thinking, why are men, as Rosie Waterland famously says.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell the listeners very briefly about why we are frustrated with men? What made this particular man that did a particular thing that you talked about in this episode?
Yeah, so I did a deep dive episode. The episode's called Scarred for Life, and it's about a UK liver transplant surgeon, Simon Bramhall, who decided he was very well-respected, renowned, did fabulous things, had done over 300 liver transplants without any problems that we know of. And he just decided one day after a particularly bad day maybe that he would put his initials using a electric diathermy device onto the freshly transplanted liver. And he admitted to doing that twice. And he didn't really have any reason for it other than it was a bad day, and all before he knew he'd done it and branded these poor people. We shouldn't laugh, but I mean, it's just and like the whole story is like a 90s daytime TV medical drama show. Like he transplanted a liver from it. I won't give too much away, but like honestly, go listen, because when I started to investigate it, I was like, oh, like, wow. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. I bet you when you're researching it, you're just like, oh, surely there's like, you know, some context around this. I'm sure like, you know, the livers weren't being used or anything like that. It was just some ones that were getting transplanted out of a body. It's just like, no. Someone actually had a liver with his initials.
And he probably would have got away with it too, because it's not something that you, unless you reopen the person to look at their liver, which is what happened with one patient, it eventually disappears. So you wouldn't see it on any ultrasound or CT or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, he almost got away with it. So, and I wonder how many he would have done had he not got caught.
So I highly recommend listeners tune into the episodes to find out how he got discovered and also what happened to him afterwards. All I can say is that you'll be left enraged because the sheer audacity of a man to leave his initials on your body without your consent. Like, I had my entire face when I was listening to that was just like, what? What?
I know.
Shocked. Yeah. So yes, highly recommend everyone listen to that episode if you're keen on being angry with men for another extra day in your life. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But on the podcast today, even though I could talk to you about that for a very long time and why I got very cranky at him, we are here to talk about the issues, taboos, and topics to do with being a plus size person. And you are a plus size nurse. Your title is you're a nurse unit manager at a cancer day unit. And you're here to talk about what it's like to be a nurse in a plus size body, because I can imagine someone that works in the health industry, someone that works with people that might have misconceived perceptions about weight and how that relates to health, I can imagine it's interesting industry to work in.
Yeah. And to be honest, I've been overweight my whole life, and it's varied up and down, obviously. And when I went into nursing, I was probably at the fittest point in my life. I'd been worked on a cattle station for 4 years. I was a cowgirl. I was very active. I rode horses. I, you know, did so much stuff, but I was still a plus size girl. And I've never had a problem physically doing my job as a nurse, which is very demanding. Mm. You know, you don't get to sit down. I do now, I'm a manager, but prior to that, you know, it's very active. Mm. And I never really experienced a huge amount of I never not got jobs because I've always got jobs. I have experienced some feedback, if you want to call it that, from patients, maybe sort of when you're trying to give health promotion advice and things like that. But I very much stay in my lane as a nurse. So I don't give a huge amount of that kind of advice, because the roles that I worked in previously, I didn't need to. And I would refer them to professionals. We have dietitians and stuff for that. But I have experience from doctors, both in my workplace and in my personal life, a lot of shame, I guess. I worked in the operating theatres, and I had a bariatric surgeon, and I was working in his theatre. And bariatric surgery is weight loss surgery, so lap banding, gastric sleeving. And he said to me, "Oh, I give you a staff discount." And I was like, okay, I was so awkward. And he was like, "I don't know how you stand on your feet all day." And I was like, "Actually, quite easily." So sometimes it's really subtle, and other times just any, and that was in a room full of people.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you respond? Obviously, it would have been very difficult because there is that chain of power, and when there's like different power dynamics, it can really influence how you feel like you're allowed to react in that situation.
I'm your typical fat, funny friend. So I just laughed it off and was like, like, whatever. That wasn't actually the worst thing he'd ever did to me in the operating theater either. So he had quite a reputation of being an asshole, to be honest. But I did say something to my managers, but it never really went anywhere. And and I think the worst part was that I had weight loss surgery like 6 years prior, and it was the worst decision I ever made in my life. And I was quite triggered working in that theater anyway. And especially when sometimes you're doing that surgery on people that you just think, why are you doing this? Because they're private patients, they can pay for it. Like, they're not even that big in reality. Like, you know, there's a time and a place, I think, for that kind of thing. And sometimes these people only have a small amount of weight to lose, really. And I found it a real struggle. Yeah.
Wow. That would have been so, so hard. Yeah. Because Oh, there is definitely this misconception with weight loss surgery. Like, there's people that say, oh, it's just the quick fix. It's the easy fix, which is just, oh, yeah. It is the most infuriating thing to hear.
It was like the worst thing I've ever done in my life. Like, yeah, I lost weight really fast because I wasn't eating. And I was vomiting anything I put in my mouth. I vomited for nearly 4 years straight.
Oh, my God.
And it was... And I think because I lost weight really quick, people would start telling me like how pretty I was, or, you know, like suddenly my single friends wanted to go out with me or were hitting on me. And I was like, oh, so my worth is my weight, not who I am as a person. And I became mentally quite unwell. And I met my husband around the same time, like about 6 months after I had the surgery, and I was so scared that when or if I gained the weight back that I would lose him. Yeah. And that wasn't the case at all. He was great. I mean, he was great considering I vomited 10 minutes after I met him, like, because I ate a chicken nugget. And then I was like, oh, God, I'm so sorry. Like, this is just what I do. Like, but, yeah, it was really interesting. And I think there are people that gain a lot from weight loss surgery, and it is what they need and it is the best thing for them. But I didn't get any support psychologically or any, and this was back when it was super popular. And, you know, I had a really great surgeon, and that proves now because I tried to take the band out and my surgeon now said it's, I can't. He did it so well, I'll damage your stomach. So now I'm kind of just stuck with this thing inside me that I want to get rid of that I can't. So, yeah.
You tried to take it out. Oh, my God.
Yeah, because I don't vomit a lot anymore, but I still do. And, so I went and saw a surgeon and they were like, they did such a great job. I will perforate your stomach if I try and take this out.
God.
Yeah, so for me the risk was too high. Yeah.
Wow. With that experience and like you're still dealing with like the repercussions of it all, how did you go then? We'll go back to when you're in the theater and you're with the surgeon that was like performing these weight loss surgeries, because obviously when you're in the theater, the person you're seeing getting the surgery is like your... Again, tell me if this is like too much details and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, and also listeners, I'm sorry if this is too much details, if you can't do this kind of talk, but you're obviously seeing the fat, like, you know, they're being opened up. You're seeing the fat. I'm interested, like, how did that ever like change or influence like your thoughts on like, you know, fat? Like, you know, when we think of fat, we think, you know, a belly or a flabby arm or something like that. When you were there and you saw, like, you know, I don't know how it happens, like if they pull out fat, I don't know how it works, but like,
like, so when they do the weight loss surgery, they don't actually do anything to your body except your stomach, where they either use staples and like staple your stomach into a sleeve. So they basically cut your stomach in half and they take half of your stomach out, or they put a band in which sits sort of at the top of your stomach and creates a little pouch so you can only eat very small amounts of food. And it changes the type of food that you can eat, whereas a sleeve, you can eat almost any type of food but just very, very small amounts.
Yeah.
But I think the one thing that did interest me was when we go in laparoscopically, so we use cameras to go in. We don't cut people open. Yeah, like the TV might show you. We might have to if something goes wrong, but I think – prior to my surgery, I had to do 2 weeks of like a very low calorie shake diet. I won't say the names or anything, but basically my surgeon put me on it and I asked why, and it wasn't about losing weight. It was about shrinking your liver because your liver can store fat and you can develop what we call a fatty liver. Not all fat people have a fatty liver, but you know, like it's, the liver is a really large organ which sits over the top of your stomach. So you have to lift it out of the way to get to your stomach.
Yeah.
And it can be quite dangerous to do that, because if you cut your liver, you can hemorrhage quite quickly. The liver will fix itself really easily, but, you know, in the meantime, you can bleed to death. And I think looking at people's livers and actually looking inside people's body and seeing that visceral fat around their tummies, and it sort of made me think about, you know, what it does inside you and how it can be damaging. But also, some of these people are super healthy, like no blood pressure problems, no diabetes, no cholesterol issues. You know, just because you know, sometimes it isn't the case, and sometimes, you know, you are very unwell, and that's why they have the surgery to help reduce those health conditions. But it's super interesting if you ever get to see inside a body. Like, the anatomy doesn't look like it does in the books, and it's really quite beautiful. Like, you know, it's just, sometimes it's gross. People think it's gross, but I think the inside of the human body is amazing. Yeah.
I get that. Yep. I go through little obsessions of like which part of the body I'm fascinated with. Like, before it was just like, you know, like facial things, like, you know, pimple poppings and like, and stuff like that. But now, like, I'm really just fascinated with, yeah, like plastic surgeries and stuff like that, especially like on shows like Botched and other things like that. It's just so fascinating, like, how the body is really, you know, we have so much emotion with our body and stuff like that, but really it's just like a bunch of skin and parts put together that's folded in one another.
Yeah.
And like, and yeah, and I sometimes when I like, and again, this is just from watching TV shows, this is nothing at all like of what have you seen, that's for sure. But when I see stuff like that, I sometimes think like, oh, here I am, like, you know, hating my belly. And then I'm just like, literally in my belly is like so many useful things right now. Like,
yeah. I think my perception on my body changed 100% when I was pregnant, because all of a sudden your body becomes like something useful. So, and I remember standing in theater, this is really gross, but standing in theater.
I love gross things. Give me and the stories. Yes.
I did a lot of plastic surgery as well, and we would do big like tummy tucks, like cut the fat off people, and we use an electric diathermy, which sort of cuts through the fat and it also stops any little bleeding vessels. And when you burn, just like if you put a steak on a barbecue, it burns. When you burn through fat, it creates smoke and smell. And normally you use a suction device to get rid of the smell and the smoke, because not very pleasant. Well, when I was pregnant, it was very pleasant. It made me crave meat, and like the surgeon would be like, at one point I was drooling and the surgeon's like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, oh, I'm pregnant. And he goes, oh, that explains everything. And I was like,
oh my God, I love it.
But I did struggle when I was pregnant in the operating theatre to be able to do the hours on my feet, because I still wasn't able to eat enough food because of the band. I had to actually take all the fluid out of my band. And I remember it was the first time I ever fainted in the operating theatre, and because I hadn't been able to drink anything, because every time I drank, I vomited, and
oh my God,
the morning sickness as well. And I think that's the first time that I thought, and I was not, the weight wasn't an issue. I hadn't gained any weight or anything, and I was quite early in the pregnancy, but it was the first time I felt my body was like tired. And I did often think, if I was smaller, would I be as tired? Like, my friends who are pregnant can work, but really it wasn't my size, it was the fact that I wasn't nourishing myself enough, and my baby was like sucking the life out of me, like the little parasite she was. So, you know, still doing, no.
Yeah, people don't talk about that enough, like with these weight loss surgeries, because I did find that, I think it wasn't when the pandemic was like at its peak, it was like probably about a year later, I noticed that so many people were getting the weight loss surgery. It just, obviously, like, you know, I can't tell a plus size person, oh no, you shouldn't get that, because obviously there's a lot of anti-fat bias that people have to experience in all different ways. We don't know what people experience. But it's just scary that people just don't know, like, this, the repercussions afterwards can just be so, oh, so draining on your mental health and your body and also your self-confidence as well. Like, I know someone that had weight loss surgery. They lost lots and lots of weight, and then it's the skin afterwards that's a big issue, and it's the sex drive afterwards, or it's their favorite foods they don't like at all, and they can't even like the smell of it, like, so much. And there just needs to be more conversations about, like, weight loss surgery. It's not, definitely not a quick fix. I hate that. And also the misconception that, like, if you're someone that's had weight loss surgery, you haven't failed it if you have, quote unquote, put the weight back on. That's what I hate. I hate narratives like that, because I've heard that a lot.
Well, I remember I went to my surgeon for a review, but I didn't get to see him. I saw his like offsider, resident, registrar, whatever. And I was saying to him, and I was about 7 or 8 weeks pregnant, and I said to him, I can't eat enough, and I have the most excruciating heartburn, which I'd had ever since the surgery, but this was at a, it was, and I was so early in the pregnancy. I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. If, like, I was literally having severe reflux at night and all day. And he said, well, so long as you eat a couple of cans of tuna in oil, you'll be fine. And I was like, I'm trying to grow a baby here. Like, you know, I really don't think this is okay. And I don't want the fluid in my band anymore. And I'd like you to take it out. And he said, oh, no. Nah. And so I had to call a nursing friend of mine and say, can you please take, like, you know how to access the port to take it out. And she was like, oh, I can give it a go. Like, she's a pretty confident nurse. So I just got the stuff from work and went home and laid on the couch, and she took the fluid out for me. And and from that day on, it sort of got a bit better. But I was like, I fainted at work. I can't keep anything down. I'm shaky all the time. I have severe reflux. I'm asking you to remove the fluid out of my band because I'm pregnant and I want to nourish my body. And he said, you'll put weight back on. And I was like, yeah,
that was, that's okay. Concern.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But I hadn't lost weight at that point in a very long time, because my body had plateaued, because once you stop feeding yourself the right amount of nourishment, your body just won't lose weight. I was really devastated by that. That conversation, because I felt like I deserved to be heard. And I guess, like any doctor, when you see them, you deserve to be heard. And just because I'm overweight, it doesn't mean you can deny me what I ask for. So yeah, it was a really tricky time, and my pregnancy didn't go very well. So that just started with that and then just kept going south. So So it's just one little thing, I think, in the cog that we need to listen to people no matter what their size are. And we know that statistics and studies have shown that people that are overweight get misdiagnosed, they get delayed diagnosis, and they, you know, weight loss isn't the answer for a lot of things. Weight loss is not a short-term fix. It can't ever be a short-term fix.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have to ask, you've used the word overweight, and obviously, like, in the medical world, overweight is commonly used. How do you go by with, because you obviously have to often use that word, like when you're talking about patients and talking about certain diagnoses and stuff like that. How do you go about with that word? Because for a lot of people, the word overweight can be, like, triggering, or it can be like they would rather use fat or plus size. Like, is it kind of like, for you, it doesn't faze you too much because it's from, like, a medical standpoint? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I hear, because I get really triggered by the word fat.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because I am in the healthcare industry and we really shy away from that word. Like, we never use it. We would never write they use the word obese all the time, which I also don't really like, which is probably why I use the term overweight.
Yeah, it's much nicer than obese. Much nicer. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like they will literally write in the notes, you know, like 44-year-old obese woman, whereas I, or, you know, they might write overweight, but they would never write fat.
Mm.
I try and use the word fat as much as I can when describing, like, especially around my child, describing my weight, or you know, like, because the people will say to you, oh, you're not fat. I'm like, what am I then? I'm sorry, like, I'm not blind, like, I know. Mm. And I think it's really industry, the healthcare industry does not use the term fat, and I don't know if it's changing because I've been a nurse for 23 years, so I was trained a really long time ago. And we sure did not use fat. We, you know, we probably were not taught to mention it at all, really, to be honest, just shy away from it. But I work in cancer at the moment, and we weigh people every single time we see them. They walk in, we get them to stand on the scales. And because we need to manage their, we're not managing their weight, we manage their malnutrition with cancer, because when we're giving chemo, if people stop eating, I don't care what size you are, I don't want you to lose weight, because you've got to protect your body while you're being treated. And there are a certain demographic of women, which is probably my age or older, who struggle when we tell them when they start to lose weight, because they're actually okay with it, because like, I've been conditioned since I was 8 years old to stand on some scales.
Yeah.
You know, when I say to them, like, you need to eat as much high calorie food as you can. So if that means, you know, you're eating mashed potato, add cream and butter to it, have full cream milk, add ice cream to your iced coffee instead of just milk, add, you know, eat custard and fortify it with like milk powder or, and they are like horrified at the thought of doing that, because they're a low fat, skim milk bred into them. And it's a real challenge, to be honest. Like, and the men are meat and three veg. And you're like, if you can't tolerate meat and three veg, please just eat a potato cake. Or like, you know, one bloke, he was like, so I'm allowed to eat that stuff. And I was like, yeah. So he went to like his fish and chip shop and asked them to order a big bag of their potato cakes and dim sims, and he just cooked it in his air fryer, but he only liked that those kind. And I was like, it's really interesting, you know. And I always say to them, especially if they are either really small or really big, and to everyone, absolutely, I say it, but I sort of reiterate to them, I'm not weighing you because I need to know how much you weigh. I'm weighing you because I want to make sure that we're keeping you healthy through this. I also need your weight to make sure we're giving you the correct dose of chemotherapy.
Mm.
And I'm really sorry, but like, and we try not to make a big deal. We try and keep them to learn to go in, step on it and tell us, like, we certainly don't shout it across the room or anything like that. And when they see that literally every person has to do it, they really do feel like sometimes we'll have a joke with them, like, what have you got in your pockets? Empty them out. Or, you know, like try and make it a little bit less like standing on the scales every day. But yeah, it's really challenging. And I can understand why people would be, why that would upset them, because I would hate to be told to stand on the scales every day. So
yeah. I have, like many, many people, I got a very bad relationship with scales. And at my GP, I've started to say, I don't wish to be weighed, because the last time that I was weighed at the doctor, I was too heavy for the scales.
Oh,
and
that's infuriating.
Like, I know I'm a fat person, but firstly, there are men out there that are incredibly tall and that are have big built bodies, whether they're fat or whether they're muscular.
Yeah.
That would 1,000% weigh more than me. 1,000% weigh more than me, because I'm probably like, what, like 171 centimeters? Like who, like what about the people that are like 6 foot tall? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like That really upset me, that the fact that they don't have scales that could go to my weight, and that so I was just like, eh, no, I'm not gonna get weighed anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay to say no to being weighed when it comes to general GPs? Yeah, I wasn't 100%, too sure.
100%. So I have experienced the scales not working, but it was in a bariatric surgeon's office. I was horrified. I was like, are you kidding me that you don't have scales that go to a larger size when I'm seeing a bariatric surgeon? This was when I was seeing someone about taking my band out just 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And she's like, oh, this isn't our normal office. And I was like, yeah, so bring the scales that you normally use with you.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? So I always make sure that when we, because I set up the oncology unit that I work in, and we made sure that our scales were able to go to a much higher weight than normal. Mm. Because, well, firstly, I needed a nice big base, because I want, you know, old people are really unsteady. They can't stand on these tiny little scales, so it's really hard for them to put their feet together. And so I wanted wide base ones, and that therefore wide base ones often go to a much higher scale level. And but I agree, if you're going to your GP and you're just going for general stuff that your weight isn't going to matter, like for medication dosing or something like that, if you don't want to be weighed, don't be weighed. So I have a fantastic GP, and I've worked with him in the hospital before, and now that he's left, I see him as my GP. So
awesome.
And last year I have type 2 diabetes, and I was very, very stressed out, not last year, the year before, 2 years ago, and I was going through a bit of a serious case of burnout, and I went to see him, and I knew my sugars were becoming a bit high because I felt like shit. And I had some blood tests done, and I went in, and he had the bloods in front of him, and he said, how are you? And I burst into tears. And he just turned the blood test over, and we just talked about my mental health. And I said, I know those levels are horrible, I'm so sorry, but I can't talk about them today, like just increase my medication or something. And when I feel better, we'll have a conversation. And he was so good. He just upped my, changed my medication for me and dealt with my mental health stuff. And then 6 months later, when I was feeling heaps more mentally stable, I went to him and I said, right, let's talk about all the other things that are wrong. And he did. We started talking about medication, and my blood test had improved with the medication, so that was really good. And then I knew he was going to start talking about food and diet, so I cut him off before he even had a chance. And I was like, here's the deal. I can't lose weight. I've tried to lose weight my entire life. So can we not focus on that? Because when I start to feel better, I actually treat my body better.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I know my sugars are high, and my sugars being high make me feel like shit. So if I had an infection, you give me antibiotics. I've got high sugars, so can you give me medication? What can we do to sort about this? I spoke to the diabetic educator at work, and she suggested Ozempic. And I was like, for my blood sugar, but also for the added weight loss benefit that she had seen. Now, this was before it had gone public as a weight loss thing.
Okay.
And she said to me, I've seen really good results with my type 2 diabetic patients who haven't been able to shift any weight, and you should think about it. And I was like, oh, like I'm not really focused on the weight loss. And she goes, no, you don't have to be, but it's a really good drug. Like it's a good, it might help you stabilize. And I was like, all right, well, I trust your opinion. So then I had this conversation with my doctor, and he did sort of start on the diet slightly, and then could see obviously I was a bit like, no thank you. And I'd maintained my weight for quite a few years at that point, and I figured that's better than upping and downing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we decided that I tried a certain amount of drugs, and then I did qualify for Ozempic, and we would start it. And I was like, I was really nervous because I didn't want to inject myself, because although I'm a very heavily tattooed nurse, I'm terrified of needles. And and I didn't want to give myself any needles. And so the Ozempic needles, like, so tiny. Like, I did it and I had to trick myself into doing it. I was like, I'll do it on three. And then on two, I stabbed myself. Like, mind games. It's so dumb. Anyway, in the 3 months that I started to use it, I did lose weight, and I lost weight easily. Didn't even try. Nothing changed in me. And then because there's lots of side effects with Ozempic, and I'm not sure, like, all those celebrities out there in Bravo land that are clearly on Ozempic, and some of them admitting to it, mm-hmm. like, I'm not sure if they've, like, I had terrible diarrhea. I'll give you that. Like, it was horrific. And, I mean, I just can't imagine Kyle sitting on the toilet all day, like. Anyway, and then of course the shortage happened and I couldn't get it, and I was like, oh well, like, let's just swap to another drug, right? I don't care about it that much, like, yeah it was great, but also for me it wasn't necessarily about the weight loss, it was about getting my sugars under control, which it did. A fabulous, everything went back to like completely normal levels. So I switched to a tablet because I tried a different injection, which wasn't a weight loss one at all. And the needle hurt so bad. And I was like, no, I still got some sitting in my fridge. I was like, give me a tablet. Like, I'm not doing this anymore. And I haven't gone back on it. I changed the way I do things. And I do Pilates and stuff now. And I exercise for my mental health, which is so dumb because I hate exercise so much, but oh, I.
And you walk nothing... already so much at well, your work well, already.
Now I'm a nurse unit manager. I do spend a lot of time at the desk, and I think that's why I started to do some exercise this year, because I felt like I was being really sedentary, and I wasn't used to that, because as a nurse, you are very active, and I felt like I got my steps in doing that. And then, yeah, and I was starting to get like sore hips and things, and I thought, oh well, maybe I'll go do something. And I did an 8-week challenge, and I did it to just go regularly to the gym, and which is not something I ever have done ever in my life, and it was fun, and it was just really lighthearted, and I switched to Pilates, and now I just whinge and moan my way through Pilates because like Pilates looks easy. Any exercise you can do without shoes on, laying on your back, but it's like, it's, you know, and it's not about weight loss. And I can't ever make things like this about weight loss because I sabotage myself, and then I'm just not good. So, but I think, like, I don't know if what other people's thoughts are on Ozempic and those other weight loss drugs. I don't think it's a long-term solution for anything, just like any quick fix. I mean, you can drink bloody lady shakes till the cows come home and you can lose 10 kilos, but as soon as you go back to eating your normal diet, you're screwed, yeah, really, aren't you? Like,
mm-hmm.
I just want to find a happy medium with loving my body for what it can do and being comfortable in my skin, which is often hard, especially in the healthcare world when you sitting at lunch with the dietitian and like think, are you judging me?
Like, yeah. What are your thoughts then on like people that pretend like I'm only eating smaller portions? That was like Amy Schumer interview. She was making fun of celebrities that lie and say like, oh, I only eat smaller portions, I don't take Ozempic. Yeah. Do you think people, if they take Ozempic or they have weight loss surgery, do you think people should tell others that's how I lost the weight or that's why my body is changing? Like, do you think we, particularly women, because women, we have such a long and complicated history of our bodies.
Yeah.
Do people then, should they tell others that they should, or is it kind of like none of their business? Or, well, I've got complicated thoughts for it. Yeah.
Complicated thoughts is, firstly, I feel like you don't owe anybody any explanations for how or why you do things or how and why you look.
Mm.
If you are a public figure, mm-hmm. is that different? You had I saw Dolores on Watch What Happened Live with Andy, who freely admitted she was taking, I don't think she was using Ozempic. I think she was using Mounjaro, which is a different one.
Yeah.
Which is not a diabetic drug. And, you know, she freely admitted that she was doing it because she was like, I wasn't going to let those other bitches get skinnier than me. And I was like, oh my God. Good on ya. Do they owe us an explanation? I think it's irresponsible if they lose large amounts of weight and saying they're doing something else. Mm. So if you're just saying, well, I've cut carbs, but you're also using a drug to help you, then I think if you don't talk about it at all, then don't talk about it at all. But I did see an interview. I don't know if you shared it with Rebel Wilson.
The 600 calories comment. Those
1200 calories is not even enough for a human. Like, I've just learned this year doing that 8-week challenge where I didn't do any of the food stuff, but it was very interesting to listen to what the minimum amount of food calories you should really be ingesting, which is obviously very different for everybody.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
You're gonna lose weight on 600 calories, but like you're also gonna harm your body and your brain won't function correctly.
Fuck.
Oh my God. Yeah, I was horrified. I was like, are you kidding me? I don't know if anyone owes us anything about their body, but if you're talking about it, then you owe us an accurate explanation. It's like, you know, Kylie Jenner saying she never had lip filler.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. I mean, I just overlined my lips. I mean, she doesn't say that anymore, but, you know, like,
yeah.
I think if you're going to talk about it, let others talk about it, but if you're going to try and answer the question, do it honestly, because it's unrealistic. I don't want my 10-year-old daughter thinking that the people she is following are losing weight by not eating McDonald's or, you know, by doing really simple things, when in reality it's not the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you handle that as a parent, as someone that's got complicated relationship with their body, and then also, you know, you've had weight loss surgery as well. Like, how do you navigate those conversations with your daughter? Like, and at the same time say to her, like, you know, love your body, accept your body, because as someone that's not a parent, I have no idea how you parents do it, honestly.
Well, I don't know if I'm doing it well or even okay, but my kid is 10 and she has the self-confidence that I never had at 10, but she also doesn't have a mother that put her on the scales at 8 and told her to lose 10 kilos.
Oh,
so
God.
From the minute I found out I was having a daughter, I instantly stopped talking horrible about myself. I might have internalized it, but I don't vocalize it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I need to break this habit right this second. And so I am very open about my body. I am naked around her. I, you know, if she asks questions, like a kid at a school called me fat, and she told me, and I said, that's okay, I am fat, but I'm also like a really good nurse, a good mom, a pretty cool person. I'm super funny. And she's like, oh God, no, you're not. And then that was it was done. Right. And so, you know, I try and spin it, be like, yeah, I am, but that's okay. And so when, you know, her body's changing at the moment, and so we talk about it openly, and I make sure that, you know, she's comfortable in that, and we don't talk about people by the way they necessarily look. We talk about what they do or how they make us feel. And I've always let her wear what she wanted to wear. So, you know, when she was 4 and wearing a crop top, and people are like, ooh, I'm like, mate, she's 4. If you've got an issue with her belly, that's on you. Like, you know, she also never wears clothes. Like, this kid has lived in knickers since the day she was put a pair of knickers on. Like, and even now she's, you know, she's 10. She will still come home from school, and especially in summer, and just put her knickers on and and hover around. I've bought her crop tops because she's getting little, you know, buds, but she's not interested in that. And, you know, I don't care what she wears or doesn't wear. And like, we have a pretty free and open house, and I let her ask questions and I answer them probably way too honest, but it's, I think that's important. And yeah, I don't know. She has a terrible relationship with food because she's so fussy, because I've never wanted to push her to eat. So I made this huge rod for my own back. But I buy the food in the house. So, you know, she can only eat what's in the house. And yep, there's biscuits and LCM bars and stuff like that, but there's fruit and healthy food that she will eat. We don't talk about food as healthy or unhealthy or good or bad. It's just what you eat. We also, and this will be controversial, so I'll be interested to see what people have to say about this. We do not sit down and eat dinner together. We do not eat dinner at the dinner table. I don't care that it's family time. We get family time elsewhere. Some of the best and worst memories of my life are sitting at the dinner table. Obviously, there's beautiful moments around the dinner table with your family and your loved ones. But there's also times where I was forced to sit there till after 11 o'clock at night because I wouldn't eat the fish that was on my plate because I hate fish. So I was forced to sit there. I was also forced to eat every single thing that was on my plate, regardless of whether I was full or not. If I wanted more for whatever reason, I was shamed. Yeah. If I didn't want to eat at all, I was shamed. I never got a choice in how much food was put on my plate. And so I was like, I'm never doing that. And yep, I dish my kids' meal up, but I also, if she doesn't want to eat it, I never tell her to finish it. It's if you don't eat it, you don't eat it. But there's also like no dessert. We don't do dessert or stuff like that in our house. If you're hungry, you can have something afterwards, but it's, and you can always have more dinner, but it's like, we have dinner with my parents-in-law every Sunday night. We all sit around the table, choose. You can pick whatever you want, you know, we call it American style. But there's still no pressure for her to eat anything that's on there. And if we're eating something I know she doesn't like, I'll take food for her. But, yeah, I don't believe sitting around the dinner table is necessarily a healthy option. Yeah, it's great if you all have a healthy relationship with food, but I don't think you need to eat everything you put on your plate. I don't think you need to sit together to enjoy that. And we rarely sit at the table together to eat. Even if we all eat at the same time, we sit where we're comfortable. Sometimes that might be at the table if we're having tacos and we all have to like dish our own up or something. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I really, really like that because, yeah, when you're younger, it's not only like the pressures you have on yourself or others put on you, like how much you eat on a plate. It's also like you look at like what your parents eat, what your siblings eat, and you think like, oh, why does my brother, why does he get like a bigger piece of lasagna than me? Why is that? Like he's literally the same size as me and like younger than me. Why does he get a bigger piece than me? And yeah, it's... Food can just be such a complicated thing, and especially when you're young and you're just so easily influenced. So you know what? Even though I don't have kids and I, like, before anyone, I always have to preface that all the time whenever I make comments about, like, children and stuff like that, because people will go, like, you don't even have kids. It's just, like, I have three fur babies. I may not have pushed them out, but I have fur babies. Yeah, look, I may not have children, but I do really, really... really appreciate that a lot, like not having this pressure on making food this formal thing and you have to finish what's on your plate. And yeah, that's so true. Like you can't ask for more and you can't not finish any of it. And yeah, it's just, you know what, I like it. I like it a lot. I don't know what listeners will think. I'll be keen to see what they have to say, but yeah, I like that. And watch it with TV. I always have to eat my meals with TV.
Oh. Yeah, and my kids always eaten meals. And sometimes when they're little, like she was such a fussy eater that unless she had a screen, she actually didn't eat. So for me, it was like a tool to eat. Terrible. That's terrible parenting. Probably if you don't start that, it's probably a really good thing. But I did start it and now I have to follow through with it. But it's, I think it's important to just emphasize to kids that they're allowed choice. Like we talk about body autonomy. Well, they're allowed to decide what they put in their mouth within reason, obviously, because I cook the food. I mean, you know, some days I cook the food, I might as well just taking it straight from the fry pan and put it in the bin. But I, like, you know, it's, yeah. And now she's a bit older, she gets to have a bit of a say, and she likes the most, for a fussy kid, she likes the most random things. And so, you know, and I make sure that we all eat what we like. And sometimes I do cook three meals because we don't want to eat the same thing. And if I'm okay with that, then it should bother you. But it will, yeah. It does bother people. They're like, can't believe you cook three meals. And I'm like, yeah, but I didn't want steak. So I want a pasta, and my kid wanted tuna, like, whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just put a podcast on and cook. So, like,
oh yeah. The only reason I'll cook is if there's a podcast. Otherwise I'm just like, all right, it's takeout for me. I need something in my ears. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to say, like, as someone that's also a very, very fussy eater, my God, for example, I always get shit about this. I cannot eat anything leafy, like lettuce, spinach. Like, it just reminds me of grass. Cannot for the life of me do it. I really, really appreciate that. Even though your daughter is a fussy eater, I do appreciate that you have made it that she doesn't have to be ashamed about it, because I have grown up to feel very ashamed about my fussy eating habits. Like, it gets to a point, even if it's like the tiniest smidge of lettuce, I have to pick it off, like even a cheeseburger, because I just feel like I'm going to barf. But like,
lettuce doesn't belong in burgers. Like, what a waste.
What does it do? It doesn't do anything. Like,
and I love lettuce, but I'm like, no vegetables on my burgers.
No, yeah. Put that crap away. Give it to the rabbits. That's my thinking.
I always say, if you have, and you'll understand this, if you have dogs and you feed them some food and they don't like it, why are you going to keep buying it? So, yes, you have to encourage children to eat and encourage children to try everything.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean if they've truly given it a go. And I always say this to Amelia, just give it a go. Like, if you don't like it, that's fine. But, you know, maybe you will like it. And then, you know, like, she was like, I don't like curry. Turns out she loves curry. So, you know, like, it's, I'm not saying you should let them rule everything, but you shouldn't push them either. Like, yeah. We, and as adults, we get choice. Like, I don't like carrots, so we don't have carrots in our house.
Really?
Like, it's just, Amelia, I don't know if Amelia likes carrots because I don't feed it to her. So. But yeah.
So
a relationship with food shouldn't, this is the problem. Like, and as an overweight fat person, people just assume you either eat tons and tons of food, which isn't the case. Like, I eat a fairly healthy diet, but like, there's a shame around us. Like, if we go out to eat, it's like, like, people judge you regardless of what you're eating. So why would you do that in your house? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. We'll be back in just a moment, but first I want to talk to you all about today's sponsor, Normal. Ready to explore pleasure on your terms? Our friends at Normal are here to help, and they've got an amazing deal exclusively for you, so keep listening. Normal's curated range of modern pleasure essentials is designed to help you explore your sexuality in an empowering way, with beautiful toys, educational videos, and even sex coach-designed conversation starters to help you connect with your desires. You can experience it all, by going to itsnormal.com and using their quiz to find your perfect match. And while we promise you don't need 100 nights to know Normal is a perfect match, with their 100 night stand guarantee policy, you've got all the time you need to make sure your new toy is right for you. If you don't love it, you can exchange it for store credit and try something else. Their team will even help you pick what you truly desire. And we've got an extra special offer for our Fatinize listeners. Use the code SEXYNEWS and get $50 off all toys over $100. Head on over to itsnormal.com and use the code SEXYNEWS at checkout. Thanks again to Normal for sponsoring today's episode of Fatinize. Now, back to the show.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So to finish today's episode, like I do with every week with my guests, we share our fave fat-friendly finds of the week, which is pretty much brands, Instagram platforms, people that actually look at plus size issues or brands that actually cater to the plus size community. So my dear, I'm very interested to hear what are your fave fat-friendly finds of the week.
Well, I have two, and I don't know if you've shared them before. I'm pretty sure you're all over them though, but Curvature Clothing is my absolute favorite, because as a fat person, fast fashion is our easiest go-to, because like we have no choice, really limited choice. And so I try to stop doing that and stop buying cheap things just for the sake of it. And I hate shopping in general, doesn't matter what it's for. So if online, I can do it online, I'll do it online. And honestly, I bought a dress. I love that it's like completely customizable for like sleeve length or neck shape or like everything about it, you can change to what you want. And I'm a strictly black girl. So her colorful stuff, although I love it, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can wear that. And I have three of her dresses now, and I'm obsessed. And she's doing Chul, and I can't wait to get.
Oh my God. There's a pink one. I saw it on her Instagram stories. I'm just like, yes, I need it. I need that pink Chul dress. Yes.
Was it April that wore the black Chul? Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, I need amazing.
Need that outfit. Yep. Yes. Need that outfit.
Mm. And then, because we're like fat and we get chub rub, I'm obsessed with Snag Tights, which are a UK brand.
You stole my recommendation.
Oh, I'm sorry. I only remembered because I had just bought some more. Their tights are like the best I've ever had in my entire life.
Aren't they amazing?
Their chub rub shorts are like, they don't roll. They're like not too hot, so you don't sweat everywhere. And their actual tight tights are like just incredible. Yeah. And they're cheap. Like, they're not expensive.
I know, right? And like the material, it's thick that it doesn't like break easy, because I've tried to like try some tights and like stockings and stuff like that, and it just, if you put like the slightest little finger in the wrong spot, then you have a big massive hole. Yeah. And when you're a fat person trying to like pull up tights and not get a hole, oh my God, that is hard.
And they have footless ones as well, which I love, because I wear sneakers to work, but sometimes I wear a skirt. And so the footless ones are like perfect because they look weird with my bright pink Skechers. So
I have these knee-high black socks that I just recently got from Snag Tights, and it has taken me so many years, because I don't know why. It's just a look that I like. I love knee-high black socks. I just love it. But I could never wear them as a fat bitch, because they always roll down, because I've got really thick calves. But these ones just stay up. They just, they don't fall down somehow. They just, and then they're a nice material. They're not, they're just, I just,
yeah,
they've
really nailed the plus size market in that space.
They have, absolutely. Mm. They've done such a great job. And I also love that with the sizing, they have done it in letters. So it's literally just like, all right, put your measurements in. All right, these are your letters. Who gives a crap what size you are?
Yeah.
Because, because with tights, you always have to often like go up a size, because it's better to be a little bit bigger than be too tight.
And then you spend the whole time just hoiking up the bloody gusset of them. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I just had a thought for the plus size nurses out there. I hope our nursing community is listening to you, but eNurse Australia do a really great, we do have some affiliation with them, but they do a really great plus size range of scrubs. Ooh. And really, really, really size inclusive. Some of them I think go to 4 or 5 XL. So they're like, and they're like huge. Cause I got sent some, and I was like, just send me the biggest size, because that's what I'm always like, you know, and yeah. hopeful. And the biggest size came, and I was like an aftershot of someone that had lost like 100 kilos. I was like, oh, that's too big for me. Like, I was like, send them back. Yeah.
So I think I might have seen them on TikTok. I think I saw that and saved it, because I was just like, oh, that's cool. The size and
yeah. nursing bread. They're awesome. Really good. They're really good, and they're really comfy, and they're great quality. So I know there's not a lot on the market for plus size. We had heaps of brands reach out to us, and I'm like, I can't even fit in them. Why would I work with you? Like, read the room. Like,
oh, really?
Like, we are size inclusive. We go to 2XL, but their 2XL was like a 16. And I was like,
oh, honey, no, that's not size inclusive. No. Bless yeah. them. They think they're trying.
Yeah, it was a man as well, so go figure.
Why are men? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, Why are men indeed, yes.
Well, thank you so much, Kelly, for coming on to today's podcast. Where can people find you for more of your knowledge, wisdom, and beautiful growth stories about the inside of the body?
So they can find my podcast at Two Humorous Nurses Podcast on Instagram. And yeah, we're on every streaming platform, I think, that's out there. And yeah, we've got a new episode that we dropped today about that surgeon, but yeah, we're sort of starting back up. We had a bit of a break, and we're back into it. We've got one next week that you'll love. It's gross stuff, pimple Yay. Popping, I think it's the science behind it.
Yay.
Yeah,
I love all the gross stuff. Yes, yeah.
Same.
Yes, I love it. Well, thank you so much, Kelly, for coming on to today's podcast. And yes, listeners, please tune into Two Humorous Nurses Podcast.
It's humorous like the bone. H-U-M-E-R-U-S.
I have to admit, it actually took me a while to figure out what the joke was. I'm a bit slow with some things sometimes. And I was just like, I know there's a joke there. And I'm just like, oh, like the bone. Oh. Here to quickly and awkwardly interrupt here. The end of the podcast episode, for some reason, just cut off near like the very, very end, like 2 minutes until the very ending. So here is Demi several days later, awkwardly just here to do the sign off part. That's literally all the previous recording cut off. So anyway, thank you everyone for listening to today's episode of the Fat and Eyes podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please head on over to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening. Give us a review, give us a rating, and also make sure you hit that follow button so you never miss a future episode. And also, again, big thanks to our guests this week for coming onto the show. And you listeners out there, if you have any guests that you recommend should come onto the show to talk about all the fat issues, taboos, topics, send me a DM. Talk to me. Let me know who you would like to see next on the Fat and Eyes show. Anyway, I'm your host, Demi Lynch. I will see you all next week. Bye. This podcast was sponsored by Normal. Normal. Sexual pleasure at your fingertips, guaranteed.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
We at Fat and Eyes pay our respects to the traditional custodians of this land we record on today. This land is and always will be Aboriginal land.